Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Friday, March 30, Scottsdale, Arizona. Hello again. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Here looking at a four-day trading week because of Good Friday observance today. And traders tend to get very nervous when there is a three-day period before they can trade. And particularly this week with the important reports coming out on Thursday dealing with the agricultural community. And a little bit later on, we'll take a look at some of those numbers that surprised people when Max sits down with Paul Giorgi of Allendale. But before we do that, let's take a look at the reports on Wall Street, because indeed they went through an interesting week once again. And yesterday, Thursday, Wall Street surged, bringing an upbeat end to a tumultuous holiday shortened week, thanks to technology stocks rebounding, but the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average posted their biggest quarterly declines in more than 2 years. The year started strong, but early gains evaporated as the markets entered into a correction over interest rate jitters, fears of an escalated import tariff dispute between the United States and China, and a sell-off in the tech sector. Tech stocks reversed course on Thursday, and the S&P 500 Information Technology Index closed up 2.2% after reaching a session high of 3.2%. That helped push the S&P 500 up 1.4%, with the Dow and the NASDAQ also rallying. One analyst said, and I quote, "All the fears now look overblown. Interest rates, the concern about tariffs, we're going to get into a trade war. But now, clearer heads are prevailing, and if anything, this is a buying opportunity." Technology gains on Thursday were led by Facebook, Intel, Alphabet, Google, and Microsoft shares. And again, quoting the analyst, "Tech will always lead the charge in a bull market, and we are in a bull market." So let's take a look at where we ended the week, the day, and the quarter, because we ended a quarter yesterday. But for the day, the Dow up 308 points, closing at 24,156. The S&P 500 up 36 points at 26,41. And the NASDAQ up 113 points, closing the week at 7,062. Now, for the week, the S&P gained a little over 2%. The Dow added 2.75%, and the NASDAQ gained 1%. For the month, the S&P down 2.75%, the Dow down 3.5%, and the NASDAQ down 2.8%. And finally, for the quarter, because we ended that quarter on Friday, the S&P down 1.25%, the Dow down 2.25%, and the NASDAQ actually gained during the quarter, and it was up 2.33%. Investors were unfazed by economic reports showing a slight increase in consumer spending and initial jobless claims. The jobless claims dropping to a more than 45-year low. In other data, core personal consumption expenditures up 1.6% year-on-year. The index, the Federal Reserve's preferred measure of inflation, has been below the U.S. Central Bank's 2% target since mid-2012. On Thursday, Amazon closed up 1.1%, recovering from a 4.5% drop after President Donald Trump criticized the online retailer via Twitter early Thursday, claiming without evidence that the company pays, quote, little to no taxes to state and local governments. Stocks shot up earlier in the week as comments from officials in the United States and China suggested the world's two largest economies would renegotiate tariffs and trade imbalances, averting a trade war. However, worries about retaliatory tariffs would harm the global economy led investors to cut exposure in the stock market to a four-month low in March and reduce holdings of U.S. stocks to the lowest level in nearly 2 years. So that's how we ended the week on Thursday, and that's how the market reacted to what was going on again during a holiday-shortened trading week. So what do we look forward to next week? Well, March's employment report will be the main focus next week. The Labor Department expected to report on Friday that non-farm payrolls went up by 198,000 jobs in March, that coming after they climbed 313,000 in February. The unemployment rate is forecast falling 0.1% to 4%. If it does that, it would be the lowest level since December of 2000, when the jobless rate was at 3.9%. Average hourly earnings are seen rising 0.2% after gaining 0.1% in February. That would lift the annual increase in wages to 2.7%. On Wednesday, the Institute of Supply Management expected to report that its non-manufacturing index dipped to a reading of 59 in March from 59.5 in February. And data from the Commerce Department on Thursday will likely show the trade deficit widened slightly to $56.8 billion in February from $56.6 billion in January. U.S. seeds and agrochemicals company Monsanto expected to report its second quarter results on Thursday, and in light of the agricultural economy, that one will be watched carefully. Canada starts a busy week on the economic front on Thursday with its trade figures for February. Trade deficit narrowed more than expected in January as imports pulled back from a record high, but exports also tumbled by the biggest level in 6 months. And in Canada, Friday will give investors a look at how the Labor Department fared for the month of March in our neighbor to the north. The economy in Canada added 15,400 jobs in February, and the unemployment rate dipped to 5.8%. Looking at the oil market for the week, oil prices moved higher on Thursday. The equities markets rallied, and as market participants weighed an increase in U.S. crude inventories and production against continued OPEC supply curbs. Prices for the more actively traded June Brent crude futures up 58 cents Thursday to settle at $69.34 a barrel. Meanwhile, West Texas Intermediate crude futures gained 56 cents to settle at $64.94 a barrel. The West Texas discount to Brent price has grown to more than $5 a barrel, and that's the biggest since January, making Brent-linked crudes less attractive to refiners. A couple of other notes on the economy this week. The report from the Commerce Department that U.S. economic growth slowed less than previously estimated in the fourth quarter as the biggest gain in consumer spending in 3 years. partially offset the drag from a jump in imports. Gross domestic product expanded at a 2.9% annual rate in the final 3 months of 2017, instead of the previously reported 2.5%, according to the Commerce Department announcement on Wednesday. And the upward revision to the fourth quarter growth estimate also reflected less inventory reduction than previously reported. There are signs that economic activity slowed further in the first quarter, with retail sales falling in February for a third straight month. Housing data have been generally weak, and the trade deficit hit a more than 9-year high in January. So those are some of the highlights for the week on Wall Street and in the global economy and in the global market picture.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
With us this weekend from Allendale Incorporated, Brian Splitt. It's good to see you again, sir. It's been a few months.
It's great to be back, Max. Thank you.
You folks at Allendale got a little attention this past week when you came out with the results of your producer survey, and that was on acreage intentions. We get the official USDA numbers here in a few days, but USDA has been assuming and giving us the guidance that it would be 90 million acres of corn, 90 million acres of soybeans. Your survey of farmers seemed to follow some of the chatter we've been hearing from other firms that, that's not going to be quite the case, that producers will probably favor soybeans because the economics will guide them that way.
That's right. The numbers at Allendale got from talking to our own clients, and we do this every year prior to the March planting intention report the USDA releases, that implies 92.1 million acres of soybeans and 88.5 million acres of corn. So it was of note that that number was released at 10 a.m. on March 14th, and then as that number was released, the traders did take the soybeans sharply lower that day. And when you look at the long-term implications of the possibility of 92 million acres on the 18-19 carryout, it is a little bit scary.
Growers who are running the numbers, despite their ability in many instances to get still some very good corn yields, are looking at the prospects of, again, good bean yields, and the numbers, when they look at the cost of production, just favor soybeans, right?
Well, there's several different factors that would cause a producer to lean towards soybeans, and you're right. When you look at the given profitability right here, right now, at current new crop soybean levels, that would draw acres towards soybeans. As you had mentioned, the cost of planting the crop is lower. So depending on a producer's cash flow, that would tend to lead a producer towards heavier soybean acres. And right now, we have seen leaps and bounds in bean yields, and so if we can have a larger bean crop and have some extra bushels of soybeans, that'll help out as well.
Some people are wondering if that is sustainable, if those bean yield gains that we have seen can just keep on climbing. What's your view of that from the folks that you visited with, Brian?
Well, I do think that the genetics that have been placed into seeds have grown leaps and bounds, and so that's being shown in yield right now. And we don't know if this is the year where we have a weather disturbance or not, but it does seem like these multi-trait stacks have done a very good job of providing both larger yields for both corn and soybeans. So I do think that the trend in yields for both crops is going to continue to go higher.
And that would favor some improvement in the corn balance sheet, would it not?
Well, we'll see what happens. You know, if we do have 88.5 million acres of corn, you know, and you just plug in trend line yields, on a world basis, we are seeing the world stocks and the world stocks to use decline. So right now, this is the lowest stocks to use we've seen in about 4 years, on a world basis. And I think that's what's going to keep the funds interested in looking at new crop corn on owning it on dips.
What if this sends a signal to the growers to the extent that they then make a correction? Do you think there's a possibility that we could see enough of a downward trend in the soybean market here? Let's say USDA in a few days also comes out with an estimate that indicates more soybean acreage. Would farmers respond to that and then ultimately maybe put in 90 and 90?
I don't doubt that. I think the situation continues to remain liquid. A lot of this may depend on our planting conditions. And, you know, as we get into the field, if the weather is conducive to planting, I think the producer will continue to roll with some corn, especially like you had mentioned, if the price of soybeans does drop in the meantime. And I don't think it's very difficult for a producer that might have some soybeans protected on the board to switch that, take some profit from that position, and utilize some of that, all those gains and apply them to corn prices and just plant corn at that point.
So much is said about how farmers like to plant corn. We're good at it. We like to grow corn here in the heart of the Corn Belt, especially across the three I states. Yet the economics have to be powerful, and the bankers, I'm sure, are weighing in a little bit. Are they not, Brian?
They are. I think this is probably a year in recent history we've seen the most banker input in decisions for planting. And so, you know, things have been tight, and the farm economy has been more delicate over the last couple of years than the previous, you know, 5 to 6. And so I do think that, you know, if any of those switches are going to be made, it's going to have to be made in conjunction with the baker being on board with those ideas.
With the Trump administration turning up the screws on trade and especially on the Chinese, how worried are you analysts and traders about what could happen here?
Well, we're getting mixed signals. You know, China had mentioned to the American Soybean Association that soybeans could be something that they would use as a retaliatory effort versus our imposed tariffs. But at the same time, the Chinese Commerce Minister said that a trade dispute or a trade war would be devastating not only to them but really to the whole world. So the thing with when we trade futures and future prices is it is a perception versus reality. And so China could maybe just hold off on buying U.S. soybeans for a little while. That almost changes the way that the pace of buying looks to make it look like it's running behind what it needs to be, which can lower prices, thereby offering an opportunity for them to buy soybeans at a much lower level down the road.
They are shrewd traders.
They are. They've been doing this for a very long time, and they're very good at it. So
they've been known to try to impact the market and then, as you point out, come in and buy as needed.
And I do think that soybeans being a crop where the balance sheet is just – it's to the point where, you know, a 50-million bushel swing or 100-million bushel swing at current levels represents a very large percentage of our overall expected carryout. So I don't think if we had a good-sized setback in the new crop soybean market, I think they'll use that as an opportunity – regardless of, you know, potential carryout projections prior to our growing season, because there's just a lot of risk of weather coming in here during the summer and disrupting that projected carryout. So they'll take a stand at some lower levels. And I would assume that, you know, maybe if we get a pullback through spring planting, and I think the fund position is very vulnerable going into the end of the quarter. So it's going to be very difficult to maintain a fund long position this size all the way into the summer growing season. And I think that'll give buyers an opportunity at lower levels.
As we get ready to move into our spring season and they move into fall officially in the Southern Hemisphere, what's the update on the status of their Safrinha corn planting down there that they need to get done in order to grow the corn crop that the world is assuming they'll produce?
Well, from a soybean harvest perspective in Brazil and also thereby the Safrinha corn crop planting perspective, both are running a little bit behind last year's pace, but we are running right at about the five-year average. So while it's a little bit slower than last year, which was, you know, running, you know, at very strong levels, I don't know that it's at a pace right now that would really cause any major concern, at least to me.
The clock is probably suggesting it's getting late, is it not, for that second corn crop to go in the ground?
Well,
the calendar?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to get in here pretty quickly here, and we know, and we've seen this domestically, once we get in the field and start planting, the crop does get in very quickly. So I think as long as we're maintaining a pretty close proximity to five-year average for planting, they'll get the crop in there in time, and it'll be just fine.
That drought monitor map still shows some troubling areas of dryness, most of those outside of the basic corn belt, yet there are those edges. To what extent is the trade interested in that at the moment?
Well, it seems like right now the most importance for the concern where we're seeing that drought is going to be on the hard red wheat growing areas. And that's really had a very strong rally over the last several weeks. But, you know, this week we saw extremely poor export sales. And it does seem that the futures prices rallying to these current levels have slowed things down a little bit on that front. So, you know, the wheat crop is something where I don't know that I've really ever seen a wheat crop killed by a drought in March, but I've seen plenty of wheat crops made with some good rains in April. So we'll be intently watching further forecasts for rain or lack thereof over the next several weeks.
It is remarkable to see around Easter what a well-placed, significant rain can do to finish up that crop, isn't it?
That's correct. You know, and I've seen, you know, several market participants suggest that, you know, wheat is a weed, and you could spit on it and it'll grow. And so if we do get a good, well-timed rain, like you'd mentioned, I think this crop could do substantially better than what's priced into the market right now.
Brian, tell all of your colleagues at Allendale we said hello. It's nice to have you with us again.
Will do. Thank you, Max.
Brian Splitz, Allendale Incorporated.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Our thanks to Max and Paul for covering in pretty good detail the reports on Thursday of interest to grain traders. But I want to talk a little bit about the other report Thursday that was certainly of interest to the livestock side of the market, because it was the quarterly pig crop report. And I always say this for dinner conversation, here is the number of hogs in the United States as of the first of the month. In case anybody brings up the conversation at dinner, you will have the answer. Total number of hogs in the United States on March 1st, 72,900,000 head. That's up 3% from March 1st a year ago, but down 1% from December 1st of 2017. Breeding inventory, 6,200,000 head. That was up 2% from last year and up slightly from the previous quarter. The market hog inventory, 66,700,000 head, up 3% from last year, but down 1% from last quarter. And the December through February 2018 pig crop came in at 32,300,000 head, up 4% from the same time a year ago. Sows farrowing during this period totaled 3,060,000 head, that number up 2% from a year ago. And the sows farrowed during this quarter represented 49% of the breeding herd. But listen to this. The average number of pigs saved per litter hit a record high of 10.58 for the December through February period. That compared to a 10.43 a year ago. But truly, a pretty impressive record when you take a look at what the pork industry is doing in increasing the number of pigs per litter. So what are we going to look at from the standpoint of the report? Well, one analyst said the lean hog futures into 2019 will move lower, and on Monday, hogs could be down $2 to $3. And so we'll keep an eye on the hog market when we open trade on Monday. A couple of other notes to look at during the week. When I came to town in Chicago in 1960, we had the Chicago Board of Trade, and that was self-contained, trading in grain. We had the butter and egg market, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and then we had a couple of other markets like the Chicago Board Trading Exchange. But now we are down to really one basic owner-operator in Chicago, CME Group. And this past week, it agreed to buy Next Group for $5.5 billion. That would create a cross-border powerhouse for investors trading in the multi-trillion dollar foreign exchange and government debt markets. And according to the founder of Next Group, and now the chief executive, Michael Spencer, a union of the two firms would enable investors to access cash and futures trade and over-the-counter services via one provider for the first time, improving access to markets. That according to chief executive Michael Spencer of the Next Group. Now, Mr. Spencer is a rather high-profile figure in London's financial industry and previously served as treasurer for Britain's ruling Conservative Party. He will join CME's board and become a special advisor to the company after the deal goes ahead. And CME Chairman and CEO Terry Duffy said the new entry would help investors lower trading expenses and better manage risk. It's looked upon in the industry as quite a marriage, and CME said the deal would expand its presence in Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and Asia Pacific. It expects the acquisition to generate run rate cost savings of $200 million by the end of 2021. A big deal taking place this week across the Atlantic involving Chicago and London. So where are we going to start trading on Monday morning? Because the markets will open at their normal trading time Monday. And finally, we will be without a holiday shortened trading week until Memorial Day. But here's after the grain reports last Thursday, here's where we're going to start the grain market. July wheat will start at $4.685 a bushel after gaining 6.5 cents in Thursday's trade. July corn will start the week at $3.96 after gaining 13.5 cents on Thursday. July soybeans will start the week at $10.55 a bushel, gaining 26.25 cents a bushel following the reports from the USDA on Thursday. Not nearly as bright a picture in the livestock futures at the Merck, however. June lean hogs will start the week at $76.55 a hundredweight after losing 42 cents a hundredweight for the day on Thursday. June live cattle, along with August and October, all down the $3 limit. And that means June live cattle will start trading at $102.57 a hundredweight on Monday. And feeder cattle, the April contract down the $4.50 daily limit on Thursday. So it will start trading Monday at $133.32. And, of course, we start looking at planting weather, as you heard Paul and Jim talking earlier. So now we'll begin to focus a lot more on springtime weather. That is our time for this week. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to the CME Group for their sponsorship of the markets. Okay. Shutting down.